You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio this month with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging in Washington State. Hi, Doug.
Good morning.
We usually have with us Suzanne Berenson from Northwest Senior and Disability Services. She's sort of the Oregon side of things. Her agency is in Oregon and Doug's is in Washington, but she couldn't be with us today. So Doug and I are going to be carrying the show, and we're going to be talking about family caregivers. If you're in the age group to have an elderly parent, as I am, and Doug is as well, you know that you sort of end up having to deal with the end-of-life issues that come up when a person gets older. And so we're going to be talking about issues that come up and tips to help you in a situation where you are a family member caring for an elderly relative or a relative that is ill with a terminal disease. So, Doug, your agency deals with people all the time so can we talk a little bit about who are caregivers around our area? There are a lot of people doing that here.
Oh, there are. There's a lot of people that, because, you know, basically we're all living longer. And sometimes that's not always in a healthy way, but you're living longer and then you need more help and more help and more help. So if you're fortunate enough to be in an area where your family is still around, then it's an automatic. I mean, one of the good things that we have to sort of pat ourselves on the back is that it is automatic. If mom or dad need help, well, the family 99% of the time says, well, we need to help them without even thinking about it. It may start off really simple with just, well, I'm just running errands for them, or, you know, I'm just cooking dinner for them, or, well, maybe they should come and stay with us, or, you know, and just sort of moves on in that direction. But any of that and all of that is what we define as family caregiving. You're just taking care of another family member. You're unpaid. You're doing it. And like I said, sometimes it's automatic. Sometimes it's begrudging, but we always do it, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. And it seems as though it's something that, in past shows when we've talked about this, you said that family caregivers don't really think of themselves as caregivers. Like a person who is a caregiver is somebody you hire to come in to do that. So let's talk a little bit about that, because that seems like it makes it more complex or more...
It does. I think that, one of the things, and I probably won't get into a lot of detail about our program guidelines and stuff, but one of the things that our Family Caregiver Support Program does is a screening. And this whole program is all about the caregiver, not the person who needs the care, but the caregiver and keeping the caregiver healthy. And one of the questions they ask is, I'm trying to define what identity you have right now. You know, do you feel like you're the husband or the wife? Do you feel like you're the daughter or the son? Or do you feel like you're the nurse? Or do you feel like you're the caregiver? And sometimes with dementia, it gets even, more fuzzy, as you can imagine, as some of the identity gets lost by the person needing help. But they begin to self-identify as, I'm just the daughter or I'm just the son. And then pretty soon you're like, man, I'm the nurse, I'm the doctor, I'm all of these things. And all of that is difficult on the caregiver, because you're trying to do what's right. You love these people, you care about them, and any attempt at sort of justifying your frustration makes you feel guilty. So you go on from there. But yeah, there's a lot of them. It used to be very common, obviously, the extended families, because the families didn't move away. When I grew up, my grandmother lived with us most of the time until I was, in high school. And then she decided to remarry. So, she went on with that part of her life. But that was not uncommon in the 50s, in the 60s, to have grandparents in the home. Then it got, less common until a lot of times now, especially in our areas, the rural areas, kids grow up, go off to school, and then go find work someplace because the work may not be here. So families become separated, and whatever families members are still in the area, they usually pick up the burden of being the caregiver.
Hmm. Well, I think it's a complex thing, as we were talking about before the show. My father right now, who I've been caring for a long time, is in hospice care, which is tremendously a relief for people who are wondering if they should take that route when it comes to be the time to do that, if it is. I would say that one of the best things it did for me was that when you say that you have that role of nurse and doctor, Yeah, you have those roles, but it's most people are not nurses and doctors.
Right.
And so I always had this feeling like I was using my common sense to the best of my ability, but I really wasn't a doctor or a nurse, and I was always feeling like, oh, am I missing something? Should I be doing something? If I were a medical professional, would I look at him and say, oh my God, we got to deal with that right now, or is it okay? I mean, so there were a lot of trips to the emergency room
right.
that could have been avoided maybe if I had known more. But I would just say to people that, you know, if you're in this situation, you're just simply doing the best you can. And that's a lot. And I think it's just a tremendously complex thing, you know, to care for of someone like a parent where you become sort of the parent to the parent.
Right.
And the situation is reversed, but it isn't really reversed. It's very actually complex in different ways than parenting. So it just becomes, you know, in addition to the physically and emotionally exhausting caregiving, there's that whole emotional side of it that's extremely complex. And we don't really know what to expect. I mean, I would say to people who are doing this sort of caregiving thing that just when you think you've seen it all, something else will happen. And you'll go, I was not prepared for this. I mean, you'll probably say a lot of other stuff to yourself, too. But your primary thing was, wow, I just fell off the end of the dock and I don't know how to handle this. But you will figure it out.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And the thing is, I don't think any of us are prepared to become caregivers for our family members. Because we don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do think about it, we think, well, you know, I remember when Dad had pneumonia. And, you know, I took care of him, you know, got him and had him stay with us for a while. And then he got back on his feet. Well, with end-of-life issues, they aren't going to get back on their feet. You know, it isn't like we're going through the flu or something. There were some statistics that said caregivers need to realize if they're going to be the family caregiver for a duration, it could be a year, it could be 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and it just goes on and on and on, right? So we tend to think, too, that, well, we'll just have them in the home without thinking about anything else because we think, yeah, that's okay. They'll be in the home. They can watch TV. We've got this part of the house set up for them. And, well, when it gets to a point where they need a lot of care, then, you know, it becomes very difficult. And one of the things that I like to remind caregivers about is it's okay to admit this is really hard because it is really hard. And you need to be able to say that without any guilt. It's one of the hardest jobs anybody can do because it's not just I'm a caregiver. I'm going into the home for 4 hours a day and then I'm going back to my home. The family caregiver is there all the time. And like you said, you've got all the emotional ties and things going on too. And you're seeing the loss in front of you. So there's a lot going on. Plus, you have your own life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, I think, 60% of the family caregivers also have jobs outside the home.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have someone else come in. Then they have to do their work. Then they have to come home and try to do that stuff and then try to keep their work going, too. So it's a balance. I think the people of our generation that have parents of that generation are it's very difficult if we're still working. And yeah. Most of us still are working.
That's right. That's true, because people are working longer and longer now. You know, I would say to anybody who's doing this, just be kind to yourself. So you have some kind of tips for people to help them.
I do, and I was looking at these, and there's a couple of websites and stuff. I did a recent column for the papers, and it was kind of a self-talk thing where, you know, I start off by saying, you know, there's all these resources out there. And I said, and I know what you're thinking, caregivers, because I've heard it many times. Go, yeah, I've got all kinds of time to go look at all these places. And
sure.
I can't even check my own voicemail, let alone, you know, go do all this research. And then you try to tell caregivers, but it's very important that you take care of you. Well, it isn't about me. It's about Dad.
Yeah.
Or it's about Mom. Or it's about, you know. And like you were mentioning earlier, I've always heard the paraphrase, well, I can handle it. I just need to get better organized and I'll be able to do this, you know, but you don't really have time to even get organized. But some of the, tips that I had, and again, even though I say, I realize you don't have time to look at websites, I always try to give at least a couple that I think are really good.
Sure.
So, but some of the tips, and these were from, Caregiver Action. If you just Google Caregiver Action, so if you go to the computer when you don't have time and do that, and do that, there's a lot of stuff on there. The first thing is, remember that this is not something unique. Your situation is unique to your family, yes. But there are over 44 million people are family caregivers right
now.
Wow.
That's just in the United States.
Yeah,
wow.
In our country.
Wow.
And they are doing a tremendous job. They are, you know, because some of the sites that I look at are state and federal sites, they get into the money. It says those 44 million provide 37 billion hours of unpaid caregiving each year.
Hmm.
So, you know, of course the state and feds are going, yay, but but it just shows that how much time is put into that. Again, by people that don't recognize themselves as caregivers. You know, they're just family taking care of family. So you need to realize that you're not alone. There are support groups and all of that, and I really do understand that people say, I bet support groups are great, but I can't leave. I can't do that. But just the knowledge that this is something that other people have done and are doing. This is something that people have been in harder situations than you and easier situations
mm-hmm.
than you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do have a chance to just get online and just hear some of the stories, it's like, okay, I can do this because look what they've gone through and that type of thing. And sometimes there's some really just good tips that someone else has run into that I would have never thought of, for example. I'm doing something very complex to make sure that Dad has all he needs. And they go, well, you know, we did this. Went, that would have been easier.
Yes,
So know you're not alone and reach out and talk to each other.
Right, because I think sometimes, you know, I find that often that, you know, I'll be trying to do something and then I'll say, you know, even at work, I'll say to the people I work with, well, here's what I was thinking of. Give me your feedback. And somebody will come up with a really cool idea that I just didn't even think of. And I go, wow, thanks, you know. So I mean, more two heads or three or four can be better than one.
And oh, absolutely.
So there are, you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Exactly.
On these things,
yeah,
you know.
It is. And it's so easy to sort of get that isolation and tunnel vision that, you know, you're in the home and you're with Dad or Mom or Aunt Sadie or whoever, and that's your existence anymore. I mean,
right.
Those who are still working, at least as we were talking before the show,
right?
I get to go to work.
Right, me too. And it's really helpful.
Back.
And it's okay to feel relieved at work.
Yes, absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
And the other thing, and we were talking about this before too, is, you know, make the time and take the time to keep yourself healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. It isn't selfish. It is, you know, there's no need to feel guilty about it, because if you're not taking the time to stay healthy, you're not going to be any benefit at all to the person you're taking care of. Now, sometimes it's just a matter of taking a few minutes to break the routine of whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like we were talking earlier, I recommend to people, don't just sit down and stare outside or just close your eyes for, you know, 10 minutes, because all that activity is going to be going on in your head. Find something to do. Read one of your favorite books. Do something like that. Journal. Do some breathing exercises, whatever. But concentrate on something else. Even for a few minutes a day will make a big difference.
Well, you know, on the self-care thing, I've always been sort of like... you know, because I come from a family of Scandinavians, and we always think we can handle everything. You know? We are tough, and we will handle it all, you know. And so I always sort of had the attitude, like, it's okay, I got it. And then there was something happening, this is just maybe within the past month, at my dad's, that was just, I'll just leave out the TMI details, but it was a crisis, and I was there by myself. And I was trying to handle it, and I finally called somebody to help me. But I had the real distinct feeling that almost like there was a thermometer in my head and the mercury was rising, and if I didn't do something to get a hold of myself, I didn't know whether I was going to be able to keep control of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that I felt like it was just that I was in a dangerous point where if I was going to continue to be in this role, I was going to have to change the way I was handling. And I just had this really strong feeling like, wow, maybe I can't really handle this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can't really do it all. And so after that, I mean, I went home and I thought, I've really got to make sure that I take care of myself. And for me, you know, it's yoga, walking, you know, journal writing helps me. You know, it could be different things for you. But whatever those things are that help you feel normal, you should be doing those all the time, whether you feel like you need to do them or not. Because what I find is that if I don't do those things every day, and sometimes I miss a day, of course, but if I don't regularly do those things, then I don't have the it builds a reserve of resilience in you, because if you come up against all these crises over and over again and you have no reservoir in yourself, you really start to not be able to handle it. And by the time you realize that, it might be too late for you to not have a lot of suffering happening. So I really work really hard at maintaining normal, whatever the heck that is these days. but I know that, you know, and so, you know, what we were one thing we were talking about before the show was I was in Fred Meyer a couple of weeks ago, and it just seemed like everybody was really out of it. You know, people were like bumping into each other with carts, and everybody looked kind of dazed. And I was thinking, what the heck is going on here? And I thought, I wonder how many people are really preoccupied by something like this at home. When you say so many people are doing this, how many people go to Fred Meyer just to get out of the house and feel like they go buy a quart of milk or some eggs and they feel like that's something normal, but they're still really, I mean, they're traumatized by the things that they're dealing with. So it gave me a lot of empathy for people. I really wondered how many people were just sort of dazed.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, feeling chronically dazed by these situations.
Right, and that moves us right into the next tip, because you had to get there yourself. Be willing to accept help. You know, people think, well, I should be able to do this. Everybody else does it. No, that's not true. I don't know of anyone. I've been doing in this particular field 22 years now, and I've yet to run into a family caregiver that could do it all themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So to think that, well, everybody else can do this, I should be able to. No, you need people. You need the healthcare professionals. You need friends. You need people that will not only be able to maybe come in and visit your dad, mom, or whomever, but also people that will interact with you. Because
right.
you need to interact on
right.
some level other than taking care of someone.
Right. And there is that sort of, you know, and I'm very, anybody who knows me knows that I have a couple of great caregivers in my dad's life, Albert and Lena Smith, who are just lifesavers. I would have been carted off long ago if it weren't for them. And they're just fabulous people. And they do so much for him. And it's also, there's a shared experience between us, because we both look at each other and go, yeah, well, he was a little difficult today, or, you know, or just something terrible
right.
happened and we all dealt with it together. Or there's just sort of a sense of shared experience that makes it more bearable. And plus, it's just, you're just not dealing with, it's not just your judgment, because I know that they at times will say, well, how about if we do this? And I'm just, you do sort of get that tunnel mm-hmm. vision about the whole thing after a while, because you're so hell-bent on making sure that you're doing the right thing that sometimes you miss what
right.
the right thing is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, and so I would say that I can't imagine doing it all myself. You know, so I feel really fortunate that to have that help. But anyway, so.
Well, I think, no, you were also talking about the that feeling like the mercury's getting to the top of the thermometer,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess also dates us in a certain way.
Yes,
doesn't it? Mercury
I suppose
and a thermometer.
Not the digital thermometer, but yeah. Well, they still sell those mercury thermometers that you can put outside on your porch and look out the window.
Okay, if that makes you feel better, okay.
It does. I'm not just an old cranky person. They actually do still sell those thermometers.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I knew exactly what you were talking
oh,
about,
thank
but you know.
It's so nice. Empathy.
But I think that's something, too, that people need to realize, that maybe before you got into this family caregiver situation, you had a job that was not really stressful, or, you know, whatever it was, or your life was okay, everything was going well. Certainly you had traffic frustrations or whatever from time to time. Excuse me. But you never got to that point where you were really exhausted. And what caregivers need to understand is that because you're on all the time and you do get exhausted, I mean, you may not be yawning and nodding off all the time, but you're physically worn down.
Yes.
That your emotions go up.
Oh, you bet.
So it's almost on a graph, the more you're physically down, the higher your emotions are
yes.
towards the surface.
Wow,
and it's
really
a lot
true.
Easier to get frustrated,
mm-hmm.
to get angry, to start crying,
mm-hmm.
Depression,
mm-hmm.
anxiety, all of those things are a lot closer if you're not taking care of yourself physically.
And even, you know, if you are, you know, I know that we were talking about this before the show, too, that I've sort of realized that I'm in this sort of continuum of taking care of him, and I've been doing it long enough that I really am very, very weary on some level. And I'll take care of him as long as needs to be done. I mean, that's a given. But I do feel like I'm emotionally unstable, to be quite honest. And so I overreact wildly in my head to things that people don't mean, and I'm aware of it. And so somebody will come up to me and say good morning, and part of me will be going, good morning? What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? You know, and I'm like, whoa, girl, you know. So, I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course, but I know that I – and so I've just sort of learned to just not speak because it will be not a good thing, because I'll just probably pound some poor person who was trying to do something or accomplish something, and I – could not see. So I'm just saying that if this is happening to you, it's normal. I would say just try to spare those around you, because you really won't be able to function in the way that you might have expected of yourself before this all started to happen. So
in some instances, I think that
I see sympathy for oneself, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We got to cut ourselves some slack. Mm-hmm. It is one of the hardest jobs out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, not only just because of the nature of it, but the emotional ties that are there with family and so on. And my wife and I used to talk about how we needed to have this sort of built-in pause button for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
When a well-meaning new hospice nurse or someone came in and said, well, you know, have you ever considered? And we're thinking, oh, yeah, like 3 years ago was the first time we considered it. You just want to bite their head off.
Shall I strangle you now or later?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's because you're so tired and frustrated. So we talked about, we need to hit pause and then go, yes, we have considered that.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to snap back. And you know, it's if anything, during this talk today, I just want caregivers to realize that what you're going through is – not enjoyable is common, and you're not alone. Other people have gone through these things too. You're not necessarily losing your mind, but you are exhausted probably. And that you're doing one of the hardest job and one of the least visible jobs in the community.
Yeah. Boy, that's really true. Well, yeah, I know. I mean, I think one of the things we were talking about before the show that I'm sure a lot of people can empathize with is our relationship. When you're a caregiver, your relationship to your cell phone. I'm addicted to my cell phone because that's how I find out what's happening with my father.
Right.
You know, before when he could use the phone, he would call me at all hours over things that sometimes were real and sometimes weren't. And then it became text messages. And now, you know, I have like I get an adrenaline rush when my phone makes a noise of any kind because it could be him.
Mm.
And so that is something very real that, you know, I was reading an article in the New York Times about a guy who went to some kind of therapist to get de-addicted to his cell phone. And he was saying, well, I pick up my, because your cell phone has, at least my cell phone has embarrassing data about how many times you pick it up. I was way over the top from the guy in the article. I was like, you're a baby. Like, you don't know what it is to be addicted to your cell phone. But, you know, so I would say that that's another thing, because it's like being poked at random. Mm-hmm. And that is very stress inducing and very sort of crazy making. So
well, it is. I mean, and also you're not, not only you're listening to the phone, but people say, well, you know, I have, you know, of course I sleep, you know, I have time to sleep, but you don't really have time for like REM sleep.
Yes.
You know, you're laying there and as soon as you hear a noise, you don't know. I mean, you said earlier, fight or flight, you're getting up. Okay. I need to do something. Is he okay? Is everything fine? And it's only months, sometimes years afterwards, for all of that to sort of settle down, sleep and not be up at every noise and not, like you said, jump every time your phone rings and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it is a hard job, and people are just now, I think, in probably the last 10 years or so, becoming recognized, you know, that that's a real thing. That's something that people do and need support with.
Right. Well, you know, I think we're sort of getting toward the end of the show, but I want to say that with all this, I mean, it almost sounds like we're sort of complaining about what we have to do in these situations. And I would say that for me, you know, underneath all of this stuff is a deep love for my father. You know, I love him endlessly, and I would do anything for him. And this is part of that, and this is just the tougher part. You know, when I was a kid, he did everything for me, and he took care of me, and he was a wonderful parent. And now I feel like this is what I'm going to do for him so that he has a safe passing and so that he doesn't need anything or that it can be as good as it can be. So that's part of my commitment to him. And I think many people feel that way about their caregiving roles. And I'm just saying, I guess what we're just trying to tell you is that love isn't everything, and it isn't really. So, I mean, that isn't the whole picture. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes along with it, and I just want people to feel a little bit of sympathy and empathy for themselves that,
yes,
yeah, it's okay. This is a labor of love, but it is one of the toughest that I've ever experienced mm-hmm. in my life. This is the tough, probably the, I would say the toughest labor of love that I have ever done. And I wouldn't, I mean, I can't say I wouldn't change it. There are things that I wish hadn't happened because they were really rough on him and me. But I'm glad that I was able to be there, and I'll be there until he's gone.
Right.
So, I mean, that is the underlying truth of all this, is that we will do that for the people that we love. It's just that it's a tough road, and it's not something people talk about very often.
Exactly. And you don't have to do it alone.
Yes.
There are other people. There are other resources out there. Just be willing to accept help and understand that there's probably a dozen people that you know as friends that have been in this situation or will be.
Yeah, or people, and you know, as I was saying earlier, people that you that are going through this and you have no idea.
Right.
You know, they might look a little depressed, or they might be distracted, or they might seem kind of out of it, or, you know, and everybody, you know, I mean, all you have to do is look at social media to see how just snarky people are with one another when we're not behaving
right.
properly. That when you see somebody who is not functioning as you think they should, maybe give a thought to the fact that what are they going home to? You know, what is it that they go home to when they leave the store, or
exactly.
they stop driving in front of you in a way that you don't like, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, just a thought. You know, I've been thinking about that. You know, I did something the other day. I guess I did. I didn't even notice it. And somebody beeped at me. And I thought, wow, what did I do?
Right.
Did I really do something to annoy that person so much that mm-hmm. they beeped at me? And I didn't even know what it was, but I was mm-hmm. preoccupied with all this
sure.
stuff in my head. So anyway, I would say, you know, be kind to one another, because we really don't know what other people are going through. So
exactly.
That's my little soapbox there.
No, I agree 100%. I just wanted to give two of the best sites that I've seen on there. Well, aside from our own website, of course, but
yeah, which you can give that too.
but there's two of them if you just wanted to Google. One is called caregivingcafe.com.
Oh, okay.
And it's got,
sounds so pleasant.
It does. Yeah, it's got a little picture of a donut and all this stuff. Anyway,
but donuts are good.
It has stories from caregivers, tips for caregivers, you know, resources, high tech gadgetry, you know, just a lot of free information there. And the other is the Caregiver Action Network. And that's where some of the information that I was sharing today came from. And it's very good about, you can get into these and get as many stats as you want. Or you can just say, yeah, I don't care about that. Just tell me how to get through the day. And that's there too.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I know. So maybe something that you can do if you have a little bit of downtime is just browse through these websites and distract yourself and look at things that might help you next time when something happens. So I think we are. So now it's about time for you to give contact information for Olympic Area Agency on Aging.
Our Long Beach office is 360-642-3634. And our Raymond office is 360-942-2177. And our website is www.o3a.org.
Okay, and in Oregon, since Suzanne Berenson wasn't able to be with us today, but you can find similar services and support for caregivers at Northwest Senior and Disability Services. That's nwsds.org. You can just Google them, and they have an office in Warrenton where Suzanne works, and you can call up. And, you know, what I always tell people on the show is if you have a problem with anything relating to senior issues, just call them up and say, here's my problem, and they can direct you to somebody who can help you or give you information. That's a tremendous, that both of these organizations are tremendous resources for us here in the Pacific Northwest. Well, you've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I've been here with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Joanne.
And we'll see you next time on A Senior Moment.